Thanks for listening to the Restoration Podcast. Here in 2021, we are unable at this point to gather as a whole family for worship due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but our home churches still gather and grow together online. And so if you need resources for that, go to restorationlex.com/this week. There's a weekly home church guide with kids resources, worship, prayer, message, links for giving, everything you need to be the church right where you are. Again, restorationlex.com/this week. Thanks for listening, and here we go. Well, Restoration, today we continue in our journey through the Gospel of Luke, where we're learning about Jesus. We are learning about how he is bringing what one theologian called the grand reversal. He's taking the world as we see it and know it and turning it upside down. I've often heard that when we read the Bible, it comforts the afflicted and it afflicts the comfortable. And today's definitely one of those days that calls us out of our comfort. It's one of Jesus's most controversial stories. It's a doozy. And so let's just jump right in. Luke chapter 16, we are starting in verse 19, so look with me on the screen. Here's what it says. There was a rich man who would dress in purple and fine linen, feasting lavishly every day. But a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, was lying at his gate. He longed to be filled with what fell from the rich man's table, but instead the dogs would come and lick his sores. One day the poor man died and was carried away by the angels to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried. Now, Jesus, he tells a lot of stories, a lot of vivid stories, but this may be his most vivid story. Let's talk about the rich man first. It says he dresses in purple, which in that time was a sign of wealth and privilege and authority. And he also wore fine linens, which is like saying he's not just wealthy, he's really wealthy. And he feasts lavishly every day. Now, Jewish people had a regular rhythm of feasting together, but this man has a feast every single day of his life. Now, contrast that then with Lazarus, who it says is laying there in misery outside of his gate, which is another sign that he's wealthy and that he has an estate big enough to put a wall and a gate around it to keep people out. It tells us that Lazarus, he's longing to eat what fell from the rich man's table. Now, back in that time, after you eat a big meal, you would take a piece of bread often and use it to wipe your hands. And you would take that piece of bread, just throw it on the floor when you were done with it. And the dogs that were wandering around would eat that piece of bread. And the story tells us that dogs are licking his sores. Likely the very same dogs that just came from eating what fell from the rich man's table, the very thing that Lazarus is longing to be filled with. This is the lowest of low. The only thing greater here than the suffering of Lazarus is the indifference of the rich man. Now there's one more important detail. It says that both of them died, but only the rich man was buried. And that's because it was very likely that the body of Lazarus was thrown out with the trash into the pit. Because he was poor and a beggar, it was just thrown away to be consumed by wild animals. In both his life and his death, he was treated as subhuman. He was mistreated. He was completely forgotten. Here's how Jesus continues. He says, in Hades, where he was in torment, he looked up and he saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. So he called to him, Father Abraham, have pity on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, because I am in agony in this fire. But Abraham replied, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things while Lazarus received bad things. But now he is comforted here and you are in agony. And besides all this, between us and you, a great chasm has been set in place, so that those who want to go from here to you cannot, nor can anyone cross over from there to us. Now, obviously, there's a lot to unpack here. So let's just start here. Why this word Hades? Well, don't get too excited, but let's take a couple minutes and have a detour and talk about the words that the New Testament uses for hell. The most common one is this Greek word Gehenna, which was a very real place in that time, the Valley of Gehenna, near Jerusalem, where hundreds of years before there was a child sacrifices. It was an evil place. They saw it as accursed. And later on, it became the garbage dump, which was almost always on fire. So a clear picture of the final judgment. So when Jesus is talking about and warning about the fires of hell, the fires of Gehenna, his early followers would have had a very present and clear picture of exactly what he was talking about. And then there's this word Hades that we see today, which means the realm of the dead. It's kind of the Greek equivalent of the Old Testament Hebrew word Sheol, meaning the grave or the pit. And from a biblical perspective, it's kind of the place where the unrighteous dead go and await final judgment. So two separate words, Hades and Gehenna, oftentimes translated as hell in our Bibles, but they're two separate things. And then there's Lazarus, who it says is carried by the angels to Abraham's side. What does that mean? Well, back in that time, when you were having a meal, a feast, you wouldn't sit at the table, you would recline down on the floor by the table. So whoever you're sitting beside, you're literally at their side. Your head is near their chest. And so it's telling us that when Lazarus enters eternity and comes to the feast of God, he's not just invited to the table, he has the best seat in the house right beside Father Abraham. Also notice here that in Hades, the rich man, he's asking for mercy, but he's doing it in the form of Lazarus serving him, still, even after death. And Abraham, he does two things. He points to the blessings that he already had and Lazarus did not. And he also says there's this chasm between us that cannot be crossed. So the rich man asks another question. Here's what it says. He answered, "Then I beg you, Father, send Lazarus to my family, for I have five brothers. Let him warn them so that they will not also come to this place of torment." Abraham replied, "They have Moses and the prophets. Let them listen to them." "No, Father Abraham," he said, "but if someone from the dead goes to them, they will repent." He said to them, "If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead." So in hearing this, let's ask this question. Why would the rich man's family need to be warned? It's probably because they looked at his life, they looked at his wealth, success, his power, his privilege, and they assume that because these things are present in his life, he must be blessed and right with God. And if they continue along that same path, then they would be too. And even in having the law and the prophets, which is Jesus's way of saying the Old Testament, the Bible itself, they still can't see clearly. They're still blinded by their wealth and their privilege. Even someone rising from the dead. And spoiler alert, someone's about to rise from the dead, but it won't matter because even that won't convince them. You know, oftentimes as this passage is read or taught or preached, it's used to decode what the Bible is or is not saying about hell. And hear me, that's an important conversation that I think we need to have, and I'd love to have one-on-one with you, but at least for today, at heart, that's just not what this parable is about. And we see this clearly by looking at what happens before Jesus tells this story. He is confronting the Pharisees who are still following and hounding him. And here's what Luke writes. It says, "The Pharisees who loved money heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, 'You are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. What people value highly is detestable in God's sight.'" Jesus is confronting rich, successful, devoted, religious people who know the Bible backwards and forwards and yet still are utterly lost. You know, oftentimes as we read through the scriptures or parables like this, we like to read ourselves into the story in the best possible light. We're always David and they're Goliath. We're always Israel and they're Egypt. In this case, we're Lazarus and someone else is the rich man, but I think if we're really honest, more often than not, we are the rich man. I mean, think about this from a global perspective. If you're an American who makes $50,000 a year, you're among the top 1.5% of wealthiest people in the entire world. So maybe more than warning us about hell, this parable is warning us about our own indifference to the hells that many of our neighbors are facing right in this moment. And has often been the case as we've read through Luke. It's not the rich man's theology, it's not his beliefs or his morality or his success that puts him at odds with the kingdom of God, but his failure to love his neighbor as himself. And even the wealth and the money, that's not really the problem. The problem is that in that wealth and with that money, he still lives with this cold indifference to the needs that are right in front of him. How many times did he walk past Lazarus at the gate? How many times did his feasting blind him to Lazarus's hunger? How often did his wealth blind him to Lazarus's poverty? Scott McKnight, one of my favorite scholars, as he's taught this passage before, he says the most important question we can ask is, who is the Lazarus at my gate? Who are my neighbors that I am indifferent to? What are the needs that I'd rather not see? I mean, in the end, that's what the gospel has done for us. Jesus met us in our poverty, in our broken state, and instead of passing us by, he made us clean and he gave us a place at his table. Jesus Christ, he is the generosity of God to us in our need. And when we see this, when we see what Jesus has done for us in our need, it should profoundly change the way we look and we see our neighbors, especially our neighbors in need. I love these words from 1 John. It says, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need, but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. My prayer for you, my prayer for me today is that God's Spirit would confront our indifference, that he would open our eyes to see our neighbors like he sees our neighbors, that he would open our eyes to see the needs that are right in front of our eyes, that he would show us the Lazarus at our own gate. I think this is going to be an important conversation we have with our home churches this week. You can find resources, you can give, kid stuff, everything you need at restorationlex.com/this week. I'm looking forward to this conversation with my home church of what indifference looks like in my life, of maybe who the Lazarus is at my own gate. I cannot wait to pull this apart and study this together with my home church. I hope you do that with yours as well. We will see you back here in this space next Sunday. Love you guys, and looking forward to seeing what God does in restoration in the week ahead.